All right, guys, let's talk about Jägermeister. They could have written a totally normal ad here, like a really classic ad. They could have talked about their history, the 56 botanicals. It could have been all salesy and cutesy, but they know you don't care. Jägermeister doesn't want to be like all those other ads you've seen and heard. They just wanted to say two things. Jägermeister is great, but everyone has been drinking it wrong. Damn, that's cold.
Drinking it wrong? All right, if that's the case, how should we be drinking it?
They are so glad you asked, and so am I, Dad. I'm here to help you. Ice cold is the answer, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it. That's all they want to tell you. So, wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends or at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. It was a big day for the Kelce brothers. The one still playing football, Travis Kelce, signed a new contract. Now, 2 years, $34.25 million. He's the highest paid tight end in the NFL, $17 million guaranteed. This is a renegotiated 2 year deal. So it replaced the one he had before, 2 year deal, which was 30.25. It's a contract through 2025. Originally, they reported it was through 2027, but it's not. So 2025, renegotiated 2 year deal. And then Jason Kelce, who recently retired, is joining Monday Night Countdown. I don't think any of us surprised that every network was throwing their names at him and he decided to go with the four-letter one. So he's an ESPNer now, senior. Is that what you call him?
No, an ESPNer. The only thing I would tell him if I had a chance to talk to him is be careful how much you agree to work there because, man, they'll put you through everything. You know, you're going to do hits on radio, hits on SportsCenter, hits on everything in the world. And if you're cool with that, cool. But, man, but Jason's in a position of strength to decide to say, hey, this is all I'm going to do. Mm. So he is going to be successful wherever he went. We were just waiting to see where he was going to go. And the Monday Countdown, that show travels, so he'll still be at the games. I'm sure he'll dig that, being out by the players. That's one of the things I think, Mike, as you know, we both like as former athletes is going and calling games and still being around the players and the coaches. You feel involved in the game, and he's just out of it. Now he gets to start that fun part again that we both went through, where all of a sudden you're sitting in the chair having to criticize, right? Constructively criticize, but still, you know, and it's weird in the beginning, you know, to start saying somebody did something wrong, you know, when you were just playing with or against that guy. It'd be tougher when he's covering the Eagles and he has to say something about one of his players, maybe even his old line mates, that he has to be critical about.
Did you ever get a call or a text? I'm curious, either of you,
yes.
Senior. Yeah, did you get a call? Like, what the heck, man?
Oh, yeah. It was more when I went out, again, being out calling games, being out when I would go do, I was doing stuff for Sunday Countdown, go out to teams. And so I was out a lot. And it was normally the player would say, hey, I heard from my brother's friend's girlfriend's niece, you know, what you said about me. And I'm like, well, what did you hear, you know, that I said? And we would discuss it. Some would get into it. Some would just give me that cold stare. And I have always told people, and I tell coaches this as well, when I meet with them or talk with them, if you know, I give you a way to get a hold of me, if I get something wrong, let me know. Because we're not perfect. You know, sometimes, you know, we think we know the coverage or what the scheme is or here or there, who's covering who. That's probably the biggest thing, Mike, that we go through is that between the coverage and everybody just looks at who was the closest guy to the receiver. Was it that guy's fault or somebody else's? But yes, I've heard it more than a few times, and it's tough in the beginning. It stings a little in the beginning. You almost feel like a traitor at times because you were in this brotherhood for so many years and now you're criticizing. But I mean, my God, since I got out of the league and players now, Mike, I mean, the amount of players that are in this world now, and it seems less and less afraid, which is fine because you shouldn't be afraid to give their opinion right or wrong.
Yeah, I think a lot more of these guys have gotten used to offering up this criticism while they'll still write checks that their own ass has to cash, right? Like they say a lot of stuff right now and then have to go out and play against these guys and have to go out and take the physical toll, which I think there's, you know, valor in that. I think people look at that and go, all right, yeah, you're allowed to say that if you're going to be the one that ultimately goes and answers for it there. But yeah, it is a tough transition. I mean, yeah, I've gotten DMs from coaches, team personnel who think that something I said was out of bounds or there was something missing about the situation. And it is something I saw Dan Orlovsky on The Pivot talking about this with Ryan Clark and those guys saying for Dan, and this is kind of how I felt certainly to the umpteenth degree, because Dan played 12 years in the NFL as a backup, but he said, I'm a backup, so it doesn't do me any good to come on TV and say this quarterback sucks and can't play, because easy retort to that for people who look at my career. And so he said, I've had to focus more on the why of what happened, the X's and O's of what happened. And that was certainly something that Dad always kind of told me at the beginning as I was getting into this, because I mean, my claim to fame was getting cut by 3 training camps and playing college football. So what leg did I have to stand on in being overly critical of these guys that are still playing right now? That is why guys like Jason, who has already done some of this on New Heights, like he's got great practice at this in the most popular podcast in the industry, but for Jason and for, you know, Tom Brady, who we're getting ready to watch into the booth, guys with unimpeachable resumes, gold jackets, which, you know, we see at the NFL Network over the time, all the time, you have to have a gold jacket to basically get your foot in the door to be a player on air over there. But it means, hey, I come at this from an angle like we see with Charles Barkley, like we see it with Shaq on Inside the NBA. When you've got that kind of resume, you're kind of, in your mind and in the minds of many, allowed to say pretty much whatever you want because you've got the career bona fides to back that up. So Jason, Tom are the latest guys to walk into this with that resume and credibility. Jason also doing it for the beef. We love to see a beefy broadcaster and an O-line presence represented. If it is the 4 letters, that was reported by The Athletic. I'll wait until we hear it on New Heights from Jason's mouth before anything else, kind of like we did with the retirement. But would be happy to see that for him. Wherever he ended up was going to get a great value add there. He's the rare combination of great player who also is able to articulate and explain all of those intricacies about the game and take people inside those leadership moments in a way that's special.
And you're right. You automatically get the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad, because we have seen great players that have gone to the Hall of Fame or were going to go right into the media and be bad, right? I mean, it happens. And we also see players who were average players be some of the best. I mean, you just go to look at coaches. A lot of coaches in the NFL never played football, yet they're great coaches, you know, or they have limited playing experience and they're great coaches. So you don't have to be a Hall of Famer to be able to talk about the game. A lot of times it's players who weren't, who have to know more that's going on the field to survive, can sometimes give you a better perspective. It all depends. Everybody is different. I expect Jason to be excellent. I expect Tom Brady to be really good at this as well. But it is always interesting in the beginning when you have to turn to that other side and start being critical. It's always interesting how you watch guys go about that.
Yeah, I think guys are having an easier time with this than ever because of all the player media. Yeah. So that'll be fun to watch with all of those guys. And part of what's going to happen now, they decide to really go all in on this. By the way, congrats to Travis Kelce. Zero surprise there that they would run it back. It seems like they are all hell-bent on making this a three-peat in Kansas City. They locked up the head coach, the GM, their best defensive player, their second-best offensive player. They drafted the fast wide receiver. Like, God in heaven, if anyone was hoping for signs of this wagon to slow down, you are sorely mistaken and better get used to another year of seeing that Chiefs red littered all over nationally televised games and deep into the postseason, because they look like they're ready to go and do the damn thing yet again. Swifties, get ready. This is just your life. You don't know anything else but deep postseason runs and rampant success, and I love that journey for you. For the rest of us, the mere mortals, and for the rest of the people joining the media now, you got to get ready to do some draft grades. And my dad hates it. My dad, decades into his media career, despises draft grades. And I don't know why, Claudia. I don't know where you fall on this one. I love getting to go out here and just shoot this off. I think because I'm a day walker, like, dad's a player who does media. I am someone who played, who has now been a media member longer than I was ever even close to professional football player. And so I do enjoy some of the gas baggier sides of this. And so I don't know where you're at, Claudia, but I love a good draft grade. And I feel like we need to do some form of that right now for the people, despite my dad being pissed off about it.
I was wondering why, because I heard the grunts and I was told to say you guys don't like draft grades, but I thought it was both of you. Okay, so it's a senior thing. So senior, this is for you. Okay, we're going to do grades, but not the typical grades. We're going to put a word association with it. Okay, so A, for example, is going to be our first one. What team comes to mind when you think of an amazing draft pick? Which pick did you love the most? Is this okay? Does this feel safe for you?
We love wordplay on this show. The acrostic has leaked over into our offseason. I couldn't be happier about it, Dad.
I am interested, very interested in Roma Dunze, in how he's going to fit in Chicago with the weapons that they have and obviously a rookie quarterback throwing to him. That to me, I guess I would even go to the wide receivers, Mike. I'm really high on the wide receiver class, not just the top three, and how much wide receivers have been significant early on in their careers when that hasn't always been the case. That to me is the position of wealth this year, where it doesn't have to be one of the top three. It can be guys that were chosen later and how they're going to add to their teams.
Yeah, I think wide receiver is a good spot to go, and we knew this draft was going to be chock full of them here. I tend to look, Dad, at, I think, the cornerbacks that went in the first round as the most amazing pick. Both fits for the Philadelphia Eagles to get Quinyon Mitchell to fall all the way down to 22 or whatever they got him down towards the end of the first round, and then pick up Cooper DeJean in the second round for a team that was deficient on the back end last year to the point where it just made things untenable for them to grab him there, for Terrion Arnold to end up in a Detroit team that also seemed like they were some cornerbacks away from being the team that represented the NFC in the Super Bowl. Both of those teams being able to add to that spot right now with what are considered two of the best defensive players in the draft. That was really exciting to me. I was fired up for both of those teams. For Detroit to try and continue on what they've built, but for Philadelphia to have to counteract all of the bad that happened last year, and especially knowing the premium that Vic Fangio places on premier defensive back play.
Yep. No, I
right, Claudia,
agree.
What do we got coming up next here? You know what? I'll say this, Dad. If we're going to do picks that you love the most, I wanted to shout this one out just because it was a player I was enamored with in college, and it fits the model of what this team was over the back half of the season. The Buffalo Bills, late in their draft, I want to say it was the, let me see here. It was the fourth round, the 128th pick overall. They drafted Ray Davis out of Kentucky. Ray Davis, who had 1,000 yards with three different teams in his college career and finished off his career in the SEC as one of the most difficult runners to tackle in all of college football. Measurables aren't through the roof. That's why you get him in the fourth round. But I think for this team that obviously has Josh Allen as the engine that drives the ship there in the run game as well in Buffalo with all the changes they made at the back half of last season, Ray Davis quietly a guy that I think is going to be able to come in and give you really quality touches in that offense that's still going to try and be figuring out how to supplement receiver. I know they got Keon Coleman in the top of the second round. He's been awesome since he wound up in Buffalo with all the sound bites we've gotten from him. But I think Ray Davis could quietly be a huge piece and a huge helper in that offense as they go into this year and have to start to reformulate a little bit.
All right, is that going to be your late round pick too? Because aren't we giving out that award as well? You jumping ahead, Claudia.
Oh yeah, I probably should have put rules out here. Okay, so there's one each. Yeah. I know it's Gojo and Golic, but Claudia's going to give the rules here. Just one each. All right, don't get too excited. We're going to move to B now. I'm just kidding, Gojo. Be better. So Gojo, tell me which team you think could have been better. B. Which team gets a B?
B, we're still working through all this.
Yeah.
I would say, Dad, as much as we've talked about the Atlanta Falcons at this point, I do think the later portion of their draft, they made picks and there were guys that wound up in there that I really did like. Like Brandon Dorlus, who they got in the later rounds of the draft, was a guy that I loved at Oregon the last couple of seasons. One of the best D linemen in the Pac-12. A guy that they can absolutely do a lot of great stuff with there. Braylon Trice that they got out of Washington, also a quality pass rusher, maybe didn't test it well, not the most physically dominant player. And so I think those guys later in the draft, they did supplement with some quality defensive players. Denver's the one I really have some questions about. Like they're just in such a tough spot now because they need, I was having this conversation with someone the other day, where we've talked about Minnesota can maybe afford to let J.J. McCarthy sit early right now with Sam Darnold there because there's not pressure on Kevin O'Connell. He's got a long leash. He's viewed as a value add, viewed as a value at head coach and at play caller. For Sean Payton and company out there, you just failed an insanely expensive experiment with Russell Wilson that was part of the gamble that Sean Payton made coming back. Now his future is tied to Bo Nix, and I'd imagine that means it's going to have to get him on the field sooner than later. And with some of the other limitations of that team offensively still, I do have some concerns about how well that can go early on and how much they did to improve their fortunes in one of the toughest divisions in football.
Yeah, outside of there, I put Denver there as well, though I did like their fifth-round draft pick, Beaudric Estime from Notre Dame, the running back, so I did like that.
Damn right.
But I'm conflicted on the Atlanta thing as well because I like Penix, but again, when Harry Douglas was on, he explained, and I get it, guy who played for the Falcons, hey, they got guys that can step in and help, and they'll have a quarterback, the next quarterback after Kirk Cousins leave. But to me, as a player in that locker room, I wanted a player I think that could help right now. I'm not sitting in there wondering what's going to happen 3 years from now. So I looked at it from a player standpoint. But I really look at Denver, though, as that team. Because you have, Jarrett Stidham, Zach Wilson, and Bo Nix. Maybe the most least menacing quarterback room right now in the NFL. So I think a lot of people think Penix got drafted, more higher than he should. Certainly people think that about Bo Nix as well.
Can I ask you guys this? Speaking of teams to be better, did you think it was weird that the Patriots sort of, I don't want to say wasted a pick, but after bringing in Drake May, then went to get Joe Milton? Do we feel like that could have been used better elsewhere?
Man, probably is the answer, especially given all the needs on that roster. Yeah. Joe Milton's a tantalizing talent, but we've never seen that manifest into anything when you already spent the third pick on quarterback. I think everything kind of counts with them right now. But I'm also never going to fault anyone for taking the guy that can huck an orange 100 yards just because it's cool.
Right.
So I saw that's
fun
fine.
With the social content.
That is cool.
It's incredible.
Good vitamin C. All right, let's see what happens. What team or pick? That's good, right? Would you want to wait on to grade, senior? See what happens.
All of them.
Oh,
all
Christ,
of
not
them.
You. Not you.
All of them. I mean, God, it just reminds me when all the new head coaches come in, everybody says, grade the picks. How the hell are you supposed to grade somebody who's never been a head coach to all of a sudden grade them and say what kind of a head coach they're going to be? I mean, it's ridiculous. And we know the hit rates. So if you want to sit there and say, who do we need to wait on? Go back to your chart, Mike, that you showed you got where the hit rate was, who got to their second contract. I love the old linemen because they're big on their second contracts. And the quarterbacks are 50-50. I forgot who the worst was. I think it was wide receivers had the worst hit rate. So go on that. I know I'm not playing the game, and I'm sorry, but we don't know about any
Boo.
Of these people.
Boo.
Yeah, go ahead. Boo me all you want.
All right. It's because you didn't have an answer. I'll take the Las Vegas Raiders on this. They were the team that missed out on the quarterback lottery, and I actually think made a smart decision by not reaching for one of the quarterbacks that was later in the first round. And by later, I mean midway through after six quarterbacks were already off the board. The Brock Bowers pick was curious. I thought they should have gone defensive back. They could have had their top pick of the corners on the board at that point and instead doubled up at tight end now in a way that I'm excited to watch, but I don't know what it nets you, especially knowing who you've got to face in the division, knowing your quarterback situation is not the quarterback fuster on the roster. You got other quality guys in there. Tommy Eichenberg went healthy out of Ohio State, I think can play some ball at linebacker. Jackson Powers Johnson, who they got in the center, is actually right where I would have had him graded as a player as well. And so I do think they have had some good picks in there, but ultimately it's going to be about how do they morph that around and then use that to acquire the quarterback that's ultimately going to help them. So, Claudia, let's get down to the D's. What do we got here?
Yeah, and I'm just going to do this. I'm going to change this to late round D light. Our guy said down the board, but I like late round D light. So a late round steal. And Gojo, you did mention one. Does another one come to mind, or you want to stick with that pick?
Well, I would say, too, for the New Orleans Saints, getting Spencer Rattler in the fifth round, all that dumb stuff that came out about the scouts worried about the TV show he did when he was a high schooler. Give me a break. There is so much more to go off of there. I saw, you know, his head coach now, Shane Beamer, came out and said, anyone who's called me and asked me, have told him about the growth he made during his time at Oklahoma, what he was to that South Carolina team, that's ridiculous. And that's a player, Dad, that I know I probably got a little out over my skis in the pre-draft evaluation process, but I think there is a lot to work with there potentially, and now he's got the chance to sit and develop even more at the pro level.
I'm going with Kansas City's second fourth-round pick. Kansas City does a nice job in later rounds. The safety from Washington State, Jaden Hicks. Remember, you lost L'Jarius Sneed. You traded him away. You have an excellent corner, obviously, in McDuffie. Justin Reed is in his last year. Then he becomes a free agent. This kid's 6'2", 211, can cover tight ends, does a nice job playing up and playing on the run. I like his size, and I think Kansas City just does a nice job with hitting on guys later in the draft as well. We've seen it before, and I think this is a kid, whether it's this year or next year, start to make a nice impact.
Yeah, I think one thing we saw throughout a lot of the draft was where you land, both in terms of the quality of the organization, the quality of coaching, but also who else is in that position room with you goes such a long way. Having quality veterans at your spot that can shepherd you in. We talked about that a lot with Jalen Carter last year, going into that Philadelphia Eagles defensive line room with all of the leaders that they had there. Coming up next, we will look at fixed MLB pants and give you the player we're most excited to watch from this NFL draft class going into the 24 season. Growing up playing sports, I learned really quickly that how you do the little things is how you're going to do everything. That's why coaches always harped on us about having our hand behind the line on sprints or picking up our locker, because that was going to directly translate to critical moments on the field, making sure we're lined up right, taking the right steps so we can go out there and execute and win ball games. Small actions can have big benefits, just like how taking care of your gut can support your entire body's health. That's where our friends at Seed come into play. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic is going to benefit your gut, skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. I just got my welcome kit and started taking Seed's DSO1 myself, and I'm loving it. I love the convenience of being able to have it in the cabinet with my other supplements because you don't need to worry about refrigerating it, and I love the free travel vial that comes along with it. I'm constantly on the road, and so being able to take DSO1 with me on the go is huge for my lifestyle here. I'll tell you what else I love is the fact that it's backed by science. DSO1 was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you can trust. And it's great with convenience, too. Probiotics and prebiotics work best when they're used consistently, just like any other routine health habit. And Seed's subscription service is going to easily help build DSO1 into your routine, again, with no refrigeration required. So, trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO.
We're back here on Gojo and Golic, and Senior begged us to finish up this draft recap, so we're going to have to do it with the grades. We're down to F now, Senior. Fun to watch. Give me a pick you're most excited to watch this season.
I know a lot of talk about the quarterbacks, and obviously I've talked a lot about the wide receivers and the impact they're going to have, but I'm going to go to a guy Mike's brought up a lot as well, and I love, and my old position, he was the second defensive player off the board to the Seattle Seahawks, Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle. I'm so intrigued by him and how his game will transfer to the next level from college at Texas to the NFL, and how he makes penetration and how he changes direction of running backs, of what kind of success he's going to have in that right out of the gate in the NFL. So he's one, Mike, I'm really looking at to see his early impact.
Yeah, it's a great pick. I'm excited for that one too, but I'm also, I think, very excited. And I struggle with this one because, Dad, what you brought up with wide receiver was really compelling. I think Malik Nabers is the most interesting of the three wide receivers in the situation he's going into, because he's essentially tasked with helping save Daniel Jones's career with the New York Giants. Yeah. He is seen as the weapon he hasn't have. He's seen as the guy that can take the top off the defense in the way that that Giants offense has been deficient in. And so compared to Marvin Harrison Jr. going to a place that's already got a quarterback that they're locked into and counting on there, Rome Odunze going and joining Caleb Williams as this renewed energy around the Bears is really palpable. But I'll go offensive line well because the brand is strong. And I'll say Tyler Guyton. I think this is fascinating. A guy that got better and better as the year went along, going into a really pivotal spot. Like, there's a very good chance he is the starter for this team in a year where Dak Prescott is walking into the season still with 1 year before he hits free agency. Everything about the way Jerry Jones is built, this seems like after this year, there could be major changes in the organization. And you're asking at this pivotal time for a rookie who's a guy that's still more traits than he is consistent production to go out there and potentially be the difference maker, replacing a guy who's going to be in the Ring of Honor in Tyron Smith one day that just walked out the door to the Jets. And so we talked about this with Travis Kelce in that tight end room for Wiley coming in there about how important that is. I think also for Tyler Guyton walking into this O-line room with Zach Martin and with the history of development the Dallas Cowboys have makes me really excited to watch this guy, because, man, if they can get him to put it together, he's got rare physical skills that put him in the top 1% of what human beings are capable of at that position.
Yeah, he is really, really, really risen. But you're right, now going to practical application of what we think he could be and what he's going to be at, oh, one of the toughest positions on the offensive line right out of the gate in a what seems to every year be a pivotal year for Dallas. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, he's a critical domino in that entire situation. We'll wait and see if anything else gets done this offseason. We know, again, they've still got a wide receiver, the best defensive player arguably in football, and, oh, by the way, the quarterback, all who have money, they need to figure out how they're going to pay out, but Jerry Jones just wants to watch leaves fall and then cryptically sign Zeke Elliott after the draft. So plenty more to still die. Dad, of all the draft grades that you've ever done, is that the most palatable for you there? Do you feel best about that? We didn't actually make you give all 32 teams an A through an F and put you in that tough position. Do you feel better about this?
I appreciate that very much, because I'd much rather talk about players, just what you said earlier, to teams and who's at their position, style of play they play, to see how they're going to fit in, rather than grading them, because we just don't know.
I mean, you might not know, but this Pittsburgh Steelers draft, it feels like you kind of know on this run, right? I mean, giving this anything less than an A would be pretty crazy. A couple of starting offensive linemen in this draft. I mean, you could end up with three. Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State. Hubba hubba, what a road grader there. Roman Wilson, a tone setter. The way we're used to seeing gritty wide receivers in Pittsburgh, how can you not give them an A, right, Dad?
Whatever. Whatever. Yeah, give them an A. Give them all. You know what? Give them all an A, because when you talk to every team after the draft, they all got the person that they wanted. No matter what, we got exactly who we wanted, so they all get an A. How about that?
God, I really thought I was going to be able to bait you into that with some Steel City beef.
No.
One of these days, I'm going to get you on the right side of history. No. Speaking of people that got an F. No. For their grade. Claudio, let's talk about Major League Baseball's pants. It seems like they're finally going to do something about this. A victory. The Major League Baseball Players Association for years was lauded as the most powerful PA in sports. And I think in recent years, that's sort of taken somewhat of a hit, as we've seen the Major League middle class kind of priced out in a number of different ways. That market certainly moneyballed into a tough position. But this, another show of force, as they now appear to be getting ready to do to vanquish these awful Nike jerseys that we've seen this year.
Like, they've heard and they've seen enough. We've seen enough underpants, okay? Get rid of the see-through pants. Bring back the real lettering on the jerseys. Like, this isn't even baseball. It's America's pastime, and we're just seeing through everything. It's wrong. But what I love that MLB did is they
America's
said, hey.
America's time now.
What is wrong with you? MLB is throwing shade, though, at Nike. They're saying it is not us. They put out a memo saying, quote, This has been entirely a Nike issue at its core. What has happened here is that Nike was innovating something that didn't need to be innovated, echoing what I just said. We saw this in spring training. We saw the clothes. We saw the pictures. We saw the guys bending over, seeing way too much of what was going on. Why be cheap, Nike? You have so much money. Why be cheap, Senior?
And I think, you know, a lot of people will ask, well, why didn't baseball check them all out? You know, check it all out before they okayed it. I think a lot of that is Nike has been trusted, right? Nike's a trusted brand. And you're saying, okay, Nike is going to do our uniforms. Great. You know, but I think that memo says it all, the last line, that they were innovating something that didn't need to be innovated, trying to get too cute. I remember, Mike, way back when you guys were in high school and you became an Under Armour team, and Under Armour tried to come out with cleats. They tried to enter that space, and their first iteration of it, the bottoms were falling off. It was just a mess, an absolute mess, and they had to redo everything. And now it seems, Nike, for the lack of a better term, tried to get too cute with this with some of their changes. So they'll go back now. It won't be until the 25 season. So, you know, you still get to see through the pants and mismatched grays and small lettering on the back and ripped pants and whatever else you're going to see. But it's at least I'm glad to see they've all recognized and didn't try and talk around this, because they're awful. I mean, they're just flat out awful.
I mean, they all got to throw them under the bus, even though Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association, I believe both have ownership stake in Fanatics, or at least a small part of that, as they were the company that's also been the third party in this that Nike's outsourced a lot of this stuff to. It's the ruthless pursuit of profit, right? Everyone's trying to find edges and margins in an environment that's maybe not as robust as it used to be for them. And what's the first thing to go? Quality, because you're going to buy it and wear it anyway, but the MLB players just had enough power to say, hey, we're tired of people talking about different balls and strikes, and we need to get back to just the game being the way it was, not having to worry about ripped pants and tiny letters on jerseys anymore. And so, I mean, honestly, Dad, from that standpoint, it's great that the players spoke and something happened. I think anytime you have that, I always see that as a win. We talk about player empowerment in a bunch of different ways. This is a simple but effective one. It said, hey, this is the thing that we wear and use every day. This is how we present. Yeah. And as a league, at a time right now, Dad, where Major League Baseball, not a lot of great headlines at this point for the sport. The last thing you also want on top of that is to look like the sport that's cheap.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right about baseball having other issues, the Shohei Ohtani situation, which I don't think is going anywhere. I think we're going to be getting past that. Obviously, the A's, you know, living in Sacramento for a while, but they won't even be called the Sacramento A's. But, you know, that's an absolute mess. We talked about the uniforms. We've talked about the elbow injuries in pitchers. And unfortunately, we're talking about Angel Hernandez, who seems to have been an umpire in baseball for 50 years, keep making just horrific calls, and other umpires that want to be, you know, the in the spotlight. But that's been forever in baseball. But baseball's working themselves through some stuff, you know, and we're still basically in the beginning of the season, 29, 30 games into the season.
It's amazing. It was all good just a year ago. We're talking about how much the pitch clock has improved the sport. Everyone's having a good time. Major League Baseball felt like it was singing Kumbaya last year. And now this year, we're talking about see-through ripped pants and arm injuries. Oh, what a fickle, fickle game. We're this close to crowning an NBA champion. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Well, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code GOJO. That's code GOJO for new customers to get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario, one no sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, wagering and deposit restrictions, terms and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. UAB is the first D1 football school to join the Players Association. The whole roster logged on to athlete.org. The interesting part of this is their coach was the one to tell them to do this. Head coach Trent Dilfer said, "They're going to have a seat at the table. I wanted to make sure I helped pour gasoline on something that is going to happen no matter what. I might as well use my influence to help it happen faster on behalf of our players." Gojo, please, Mike, explain this to us. What does this mean, big picture?
I think it means big picture. Everyone knows where this is going, Dad, between this headline that we're seeing right now and then the headline that the NCAA could be looking to settle in a major lawsuit that could have had them on the hook for $4 billion in damages if they were found on the wrong side of that one, could be trying to settle in a lawsuit that a way that could pave the way for players to have a revenue share in the future as the NCAA model looks like it's primed to change around college athletics. And so I think we've seen that a lot of coaches more than willing to step out and be in front of this for reasons that I think are selfish in that, hey, they understand this is good for player acquisition to be seen as the coach that's pro player, that's trying to show these guys, I'm with you, I believe in this cause there. But also for them to, or I should say, that's the selfless one. The selfish one is the sooner it goes to a more business-like model, the more control a lot of these coaches and organizations get back, as they've seen a lot of this right. Unregulated in the NIL era, outsourced to collectives and feeling like they have less of a grasp on these little kingdoms than they're used to having. So I think there's reasons on both sides why coaches might do this, but ultimately Trent Dilfer and UAB, a guy who comes from the broadcast ranks more recently than a lot of his coaching counterparts, seeing where this is going and understanding this is both good PR and probably just good to get out ahead of in general.
Trying to grasp this is like grabbing a handful of water. I mean, you can't do it because you don't know where it's going to go, but you know the direction it's going. We know the direction everybody is walking, but then there's 10 different splits in the road as you go. So I agree. We said this when NIL and the portal, the way it was going, first happened a couple of years ago. We were like, listen, adapt or die. Get on board. And we've seen some coaches like a Nick Saban, who has retired and talked about how it's changed. So you don't have to like it, but you have to buy into it. You have to buy into the fact that you know it's going to change. And hey, if you can look good for your players in doing it, like Trent is doing and other coaches have done, then so be it. But still, Mike, it doesn't give me any thought, I don't know about you, of where it ultimately is going to end up. Is every Division I athlete going to be in a union? Is it going to be by conference? Is it going to be by team? How are the teams going to split up? Are they going to separate from the NCAA? We still don't know. How much is the government going to get involved in NIL? How much is that going to change? Is it going to come from the school? Do the schools need capologists and GMs now, you know, to decide if they're going to be the ones giving out money? What's going to happen to the collective? So while we all know the direction we're going and everybody is slowly in mass moving that way, we still have no idea where it's going to end up. We know players are benefiting now and coaches are getting a little more inkling of maybe some of the directions it's going on, how they have to deal with it from their side. It's player acquisition and player development. So now you know you can go after a player every single year and he can play right away. You know players are going to ask about money. It's right now, how do you divvy that money up? So there's some things that are clear, but for the most part, it's still pretty partly cloudy out there.
I actually think we've got a better idea of where most of this is going than we did a while ago. And most of the belief is that once that House versus the NCAA case likely gets settled, we're going to have an even clearer picture, because once you have revenue sharing on the table, then it just becomes, all right, athletes.org, the place that they signed up to become part of the union here, is one of a few companies that are trying to be the outside entity that helps this large mass of players all unionize in some way that allows them to be decision makers collectively. I saw the quarterback for UAB, Jacob Zeno, came out and basically said, hey, we feel like we've been cheated out of money, and more importantly, decisions are being made. He said behind their back. I just basically said, no, it's in front of their back. but it's without any of their consent or involvement in the process. And that's always something, as this sport has constantly changed, warped its postseason in a way that I'm sure is going to affect its regular season soon. It's all happened without these guys having a vote at the table. And so that would help change that. It's going to be basically which one of these organizations, these attempted PAs, wins the battle amongst those and can get all these players signed up in a day and age where digitally that's probably easier to do than it's been before. That'll be step one there. We've already seen the model laid out for what it's going to look like when the Super League eventually comes and takes over college football. And I think that's inevitable at this point. It's felt inevitable for a while. And we've already seen that laid out by outside groups trying to come in and pitch that. But Dad, you mentioned for the organizational structure inside college football teams. Yeah, teams already, like, a lot of the player personnel titles now are basically just GM with a different name. Like, their job is player acquisition in the transfer portal, coming out of high school, working with the collectives in a way that's becoming more in vogue. I think teams, a lot of them, will just bring the collectives largely in-house and say, you've already got this infrastructure. Yeah. Now we're just going to be the ones calling the shots here. It doesn't make sense unless they want to. And some schools financially, the bigger ones that we see, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, will be in a position to continue to fill out these robust staffs. Think about all the pictures you've seen where it's 8-11 analysts on the staff at Alabama, a 2-to-1 for every player. Now that would just be, hey, you've got a whole front office side of the building that is someone designed to take a look at the salary cap that I'd imagine gets more defined in this world, to go out here and not only scout the players in high school that you're looking at, but comb the portal for guys that are going to be part of your class as well. So I do think what you described, that GM culture is kind of already in place and is only going to get more defined and more filled out as we go along here.
It's some problems are going to get solved, but it's going to lead to other problems, right? We get to revenue sharing. And you're talking, say, 130 teams at 85 scholarship players. So instead of a union in the NFL, which is about 1,800, you're talking about a union in college football about 11,000 strong. So what's the next problem? You know, I'm just sitting here looking into the future because I dealt with it when there was 1,800 people. When all of a sudden you figure out revenue sharing, and then the players it's supposed to be shared amongst are saying, wait a minute, our position group deserves more than this position group, or I deserve more than this. So how are we splitting this? Why is it split this way? Then we have all the quarterbacks calling each other and saying, hey, wait a minute, we're the quarterbacks. We should get more. It's going to be a long time, I think. A long time is relative to what you think is going to be long, to where it all gets worked out. But the college side will get to, it's revenue sharing. Okay, you guys then figure out how you want to split that money up, because there'll be a battle there as well. But bottom line
is, NFL is a model for how that can work, so it's not totally unprecedented.
Well, you have a model that it goes to all players and salaries. You have a revenue that the part of the revenue of the gross amount that the league makes goes to the players, and it has to be used for salary. So is that what happens here? Do the players ever become employees in college? Can they stay away from that if you're going to revenue share and treat it like a union? I mean, it's like I said, we all know it's going in a certain direction, but boy, how it's going to get chopped up is still obviously way beyond my sense of thought or how you could do it. It'll get done, but it's going to be an interesting process of how long it takes and where it ends up.
At the rate we're going, I always think, this is something that's 5-10 years away. And every time I thought, this is something that's 5-10 years away, 6 months later, USC and UCLA are in the Big Ten, or Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC. And again, so much of this is driven, as we always say in college sports, as people want to sit around and blame the players for being greedy and wanting more than players in the past have ever had. And, is this ruining the game that I love? Look up, man. We've seen this happen as conferences and their leaders have chased incredibly large, lucrative television contracts. We've seen as the television partners have also, in some ways, been linked to the actions that have happened here. And now we're looking at the higher courts. Like, the ultimate decision with this is going to be in a lawsuit where the NCAA is probably going to settle and pave the way for this, because the last thing they want to do is, they've read the room and seen nobody outside of our institution believes that what we've been doing passes the smell test. And now they're all ready, willing, and waiting to support the athletes. That's also good for elected officials to be on the side of, to make sure you're supporting state you, and now be in a position where they're going to go, the NCAA, the one thing we've always been pretty good at, self-preservation. We've misstepped in the last few years, but when you tell us we might be on the hook for $4 billion, yeah, we'll figure out the alternative universe where that doesn't happen, because, bucko, we ain't got it like that. All right, time to finish off the show the way we always do. This, that, and the third. Three quick stories to send you into the rest of the day. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, and review us. Leave us a five-star rating. Check us out live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the DraftKings Network. If you miss us here, you can catch the best of Gojo and Golic wherever you hear VEASAN on the radio from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern. And if you miss any of that or our great guests like Charlotte Wilder from Oddball with her and Amin El Hassan, one of our great basketball podcasts here at the DraftKings Network, make sure you check out all of that wherever you get your podcast, or available right here on YouTube as soon as we get done. Guys, let's get to this starting things off. Yesterday, we had an interesting little nugget from an article from Albert Breer in the Monday Morning Quarterback that apparently during the pre-draft process, Sean Payton had asked one very important question to Bo Nix, the quarterback that he ultimately ended up selecting at number 12 overall. What's in your backpack? Nix reached inside and grabbed a roll of tape that he explained he'd need for his ankles if he were going to train. He also pulled out a spare pair of football cleats and a lacrosse ball that he said he'd use for rolling out his back. And what wasn't in the bag was just as significant. Everything was football related. All of it. Peak football guy backpack got Bo Nix drafted in the first round. And so, Dad, first off, where does this rank on the Richter scale of ridiculous scouting nuggets that you've heard over the years?
Pretty ridiculous. And I'd like to know, when he has to go train and he has the roll of tape, is he taping his own ankles? I'd like to see that. That's a difficult task. Or does he think there's going to be someone there that's going to be able to tape his ankles? Yeah. This is just some of the quirky coaches stuff that they want their guys all invested in football, no matter what. Nothing out. They don't want a book in there or something that's not football, which is just ridiculous. But coaches have been doing this forever.
Let me catch you reading one book, and no. I swear to God, yeah. If it's not about the history of quarterback play in the NFL, you're the problem is now that this is out there, you're going to have every prospect showing up to the combine and to every interview from here on out with this in their backpack, making sure there is nothing else in there. That being said, our good friend, ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes, threw out the question yesterday of what in your backpack would be the thing that kept you from getting drafted? Hers was an excess of snacks from the airplane in there. Claudia, what would be in your backpack that you think would keep you from getting drafted by an NFL team? Because I've got my actual backpack here.
I got my purse here, which is sort of the same thing because I pack so many things in here. Probably a beef stick. Which is, I always keep that thing strapped because 9 grams of protein.
Got that thing on me.
It's great. That would probably just be very suspect for a lady to have like me. So that's probably why I wouldn't get
it. I don't know, Claudia. I feel like that would get you drafted. High protein intake, trying to make sure that you get your macros in. I feel like teams like that kind of dedication.
Okay, maybe I'm drafted then. Let's go. How about you, Gojo?
So I just actually coming back from, I was gone for like 2 weeks and I couldn't find my belt in my closet. So I found my belt was in my backpack. I don't know why I packed that there on the way
home.
There you
go.
I'm glad to see that.
Well, that's okay.
Just shows I'm, you know, ready to go. Could use that for a lift if I needed to. It's not quite a weightlifting belt, but it can sub out in a pinch. I got a koozie in here from Chris Long's golf tournament, Patch Brewing. Shout out to them.
See that one?
Virginia Tours.
That one's like.
Yeah. Does this guy like to party a little bit too much?
Yeah.
He's got the koozie ready to go. The thing that I think would really screw me over, so I keep all my pens, markers, and highlighters in a Ziploc bag, and at some point in the last 3 weeks, one of the pens exploded in here, so now everything's kind of covered in blue ink, and so every time I take one of these pens out, my hands end up coated in blue ink, and I don't know if that's necessarily good if you're shaking the GM's hand and then getting a bunch of excess pen ink on there.
Yeah.
That is a bummer there. My backpack right now at this moment would be... Part of it would be full of snacks I took at the DraftKings studios while we were in Boston. You have all the snacks there. I have a lot of snacks in my bag. But the thing that would not get me drafted, Mike, is they would pull out my iPad and see all the downloaded Amazon Prime videos and Netflix videos that I have that have nothing to do with football or sports. And they would say, okay, we don't know where your mind is, but it's certainly not on football.
Sir, you've watched 57 hours of Hell on Wheels here and have not logged a single minute in your digital playbook. Go to coach's office and bring your Netflix pouch because you are getting cut from this football team. At Gojo and Golic on Twitter, you can answer that same question again. Shout out to Mina Kimes for the free content grab here. Claudia, let's get to that. Tyson versus Paul, now apparently an actual sanctioned fight that we can gamble on.
Sanctioned, professional, sanctioned for July 20th, in case you didn't know, at Cowboys AT&T Stadium. But yes, DraftKings has the odds up now. Already been seeing action. Jake Paul opened as the minus 170 favorite, so 10 cents in his favor, minus 180. And guys, I get it. Mike Tyson, he's going to be 58 by the time they fight. Plus 145 feels like good value, though. 50-6 in his career, 44 knockouts. And yes, the outcome of this will affect their professional boxing records. The 31 age year gap between them, biggest in the history of boxing. So taking a look at these, knowing that age, sometimes just a number, but when it comes to being physical, not really. Senior, which side would you go here?
Oh, I'm hammering Tyson's side, just like Tyson's going to hammer him.
Yeah.
Without question. Now, the one thing I'm bummed about is their 14-ounce gloves. All right? I wanted, it's usually 8 to 10 ounces common for competitive boxers. 12 ounces common for women and those with smaller hands. 14 to 16 ounces common for people of the average size used for training. So I'm not really happy about that. I wish they were the 8 to 10 ounce because, man, Paul would be feeling those Tyson punches a hell of a lot more. So and again, this is a guy who's nowhere near the ring wishing they were smaller so they can inflict more pain on one another as I watch and eat my popcorn and pay my money to watch this thing. But Mike, I am absolutely hammering Tyson on this. Now the longer, I think it's what, eight rounds at 2 minutes, the longer it goes certainly may cost Tyson. So hard as he's working, I know, but man, to get that wind at that age might be tougher. But I would be stunned if this goes the distance, and I'm very happy it's sanctioned now and not like an exhibition where it could be kind of toyed with either way.
Well, that's the thing. When it was an exhibition, we all thought, all right, none of these guys are going to hit the mat. Everyone's going to make sure they get paid and we're going to get out of here. I can't imagine having this actually show up on your ledger means that Mike Tyson will do anything other. Like, you're going to have to kill him if you want to beat him in that ring.
Now that
this is going to actually officially show up on the record. So, yeah, all in on Mike Tyson. We all want to see him win, but now I do think that there was already added motivation. Mike Tyson, we have talked about and seen him, the clips you reference where he starts crying, talking about the man he used to be and being afraid of letting that guy out. Stepping into the ring with that, no matter the age, seems like a losing proposition. So Tyson at plus money here, absolutely. Count me all in on that one.
Yeah. Versus a YouTube star, too. Just saying. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from him, but a man that literally is afraid of killing people versus YouTube, whatever. End of Inside the NBA. Please tell me this is not real, Gojo and Senior. NBC is preparing a $2.5 billion a year bid to take away the NBA rights from TNT, which is where, of course, this show, beloved show by everybody, is. Warner's TNT is one of the league's oldest television partners. They've paid an average fee of $1.2 billion under its current deal. They were unable to reach a new deal before the exclusive negotiating window expired last week, so NBC made a bid. And this means possibly Chuck, Shaq, Kenny, Ernie, the best foursome out there, could be gone. They can't let this happen. They can't.
In a day and age, Dad, where we see comedians, I think Jerry Seinfeld was the recent one that basically came out and said, like, political correctness is killing comedy or killing shows or whatever. Like, in that world, Inside the NBA is the constant counterexample. These guys just continue to go up there and say and do whatever they want in a way that only has to kind of tacitly involve basketball. It is one of the NBA's most valuable commodities. And so I don't know how this is going to work out here. The business of sports media is way too inside baseball for us to go down the road of anyway. They've got to find a way to preserve this until those guys decide they want to be done, because they need them.
If you're going to throw billions at the NBA to broadcast their games, I would hope NBC has already made a call to the agents of those guys to say, can you just move the show over to NBC? I mean, that would be playing chess, not checkers right there. You've got to keep that team intact.
Yes, I'd say a commodity almost as valuable as the games themselves, the inside the NBA crew, as we get ready for potentially a new age in the NBA. Same old age right here. We hope you like it anyway. If you do, download, subscribe, rate, review it. Leave us a 5-star rating. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.